I was arrested and exiled out of the country. And at the time, I had a brother here in the US. He's 14 years older than me. He's an endocrinologist. The UN and Human Rights Watch and the US Embassy in Egypt, kind of we all worked together and was able to get myself here to Iowa. I finished up last year of high school and then was trying to figure out what I wanted to do because I barely spoke English at this point in time. And I did 4 years of undergrad at Iowa, 4 years of dental school at Iowa. Things just worked out.
Welcome to The Dental Marketer. This is your go-to podcast for diving deep into the world of business, marketing, self-development, and dentistry. From startup secrets to real talk with the pros, we've got it all. So whether you're just starting out or you're deep in years in running your own practice, join us for a mix of success stories, a few learning curves, and loads of insights from the brightest in the industry. We'll chat, learn, and grow together, one episode at a time. How do you overcome cultural and language barriers after leaving your home country and still manage to build a successful life and a successful practice for yourself at such a young age? We'll dive into this inspiring episode as we follow Dr. Manzer Shekhali, who started his life in Damascus, Syria, and is now making waves in the U.S. dental scene. Now, Manzer's story begins with a privileged childhood surrounded by medicine in Syria, but it takes a dramatic turn with the Syrian Revolution and leads to his arrest, exile, and eventual fresh start in Iowa. But listen into how he tackled the initial challenges in America, from language struggles to cultural adjustments, and how he rose from dental school to launch his own thriving practice in Scottsdale, Arizona. So listen in, this episode isn't just about overcoming adversity. It's a guide for anyone looking to carve out a successful path in this industry. What you'll learn in this episode is number one, his intriguing journey from Syria to the United States. Two, the cultural and educational challenges he overcame in the pursuit of his career. Three, his experiences in corporate dentistry and the wisdom he gained from it. Four, how he turned a new opportunity into a flourishing dental practice. Five, strategies for avoiding pitfalls such as insurance dependency. And six, strategies to ensure patient satisfaction and operational efficiency in your practice. I'm excited for you to listen to this episode. So without further delay, here is Dr. Manzer Shekhali. Manzer, how's it going?
Life is good. No complaints. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good, man. Not 75 in Scottsdale degrees good like you, but pretty good.
Yeah, it's nice. It's been a little cold here lately, but now it's the perfect time. And in Scottsdale, pool party season is coming up soon too. So if you're interested in coming to visit, it's time.
Nice, man. Awesome. I appreciate it. So let's dive into your past, your present. How did you get to where you are today?
Long story. So a little bit about me. I was born and raised in Damascus, Syria. I grew up there to a pretty wealthy family. I would say my dad had a few businesses that were in healthcare as well. Entire family is in medicine. Mom's a dentist, brother's a doctor, sister's a pharmacist, uncle's a doctor. So that's kind of the background of the family I grew up in. Up until ninth grade, when the revolution broke out in Syria. I don't know if you know a whole lot about that history, but I'm sure a lot of people, when they hear the word Syria, they think of war and refugees and all that. So I was part of the revolution in Syria against the government to try to overthrow the government. And long story short, I was arrested and exiled out of the country and went into exile in Egypt. So this was when I was 17. So went into exile in Egypt. And at the time, I had a brother here in the U.S. He's 14 years older than me. He's an endocrinologist. And the UN and Human Rights Watch and the U.S. Embassy in Egypt, kind of we all worked together and was able to get myself here to Iowa, got relocated to Iowa, where my brother was at the time, finished up last year of high school, and then was trying to figure out what I wanted to do because I barely spoke English at this point in time. And, you know, people growing up here have to figure out what they're doing for college, and that's difficult enough. But somehow I just was like, all right, we're going to choose dentistry because my brother is a doctor and he hates his life. So I don't want to do that. And I went down that path and things just worked out. So I did 4 years of undergrad at Iowa, 4 years of dental school at Iowa. I tried to do endo for specialty, interviewed a couple of spots, and thankfully I did not get accepted. So I was like, well, I don't have any family in the US besides my brother. He's in LA now. I don't like LA, so I wanted to go somewhere warm. And, living in Syria and living in Iowa, I saw the pros and cons of a very large city and a small town. So I was wanting something in between, maybe on the bigger side. So I think Phoenix, specifically Scottsdale, really hit all those spots for me. So moved there. That was a year and a half ago. So I graduated June 22 and moved down here. Started practicing with Pacific Dental. It's my first job at a school, and I lasted there 5 months, which was 4 months and 30 days longer than I should have stayed there. And after that, I was like, all right, I'm going to find a good associateship where it's either going to be a place I partner up with or it'll be my last spot before I own. So I wasn't going to take anything that came my way. So I spent a little bit of time and started an associateship that was last January, so a year and 3 months ago, with it's a DSO, but it's more regional. It started here. Actually, the founder still practices with me here in the same office that I'm at now. So on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, and he's Wednesday. So he's the founder, still practicing dentist. And I think that makes the dynamic a little bit different with the DSO, since it's just been a great organization. It's called Signature Dental Partners. So it allowed me to improve my skills. And their model is that it's just, it's not branded. Every practice looks like a what you would consider a private practice to the majority of people, and even probably some dentists. And you just got to do your thing. You take care of the patients and you do whatever you're comfortable with. There isn't, expectations of what you can or should or shouldn't do. So that allowed me to improve my skills, improve the business aspect too. You can, be as involved or uninvolved as you want. And the plan was to partner up with that DSO and just kind of own that practice, or become a partner with them. And that was kind of the plan. And then I randomly, which is, so we had that interview set up and I was like, hey, Michael, let me reschedule because I have something coming out that I think might be more fun to discuss on the podcast. And what happened was I came across this opportunity. And this was like 3 weeks ago. It moved quick. Practice that was, and there was this dental practice that was on happening for a long time by a dentist, and then they unexpectedly passed away. So the practice got abandoned. This was during COVID. And then this other Syrian doctor picked up the practice, and his name made a name for himself in the valley for buying these kinds of distressed practices or abandoned practices, renovating them, getting them just up and going just ever so slightly, get the systems in place, and then sells it for profit to an associate or a buyer. So he did that for three times, and it worked out well for him. He was single at the time, and then he was about to do the same exact thing with this new practice. But now he's married and has two kids, and he's a devout Muslim, so they're growing up in Dubai. So it just kind of had he had enough of trying to, go back and forth, and he wasn't, he had kind of gotten a little bit burnt out on trying to do that same startup model again. Well, he found me. He's like, hey, I got this practice. There's about 170 patients in it. 70% of them are fee for service. It's four ops, 1,200 square feet, a corner lot, strip mall, busy strip mall, major, visibility to two major streets. There's a big anchor store, and I just need to get out. So he sold it to me for $47,000.
Oh, wow.
So I can send you some pictures. It's probably a lot nicer than what most people would expect. When I'm showing it to people, everybody is shocked that. So it moved quick since there wasn't really much to evaluate besides that. I didn't look at the financials much since it was mostly being sold as a for the equipment that was in there. So I got all my Henry Schein rep in there, took a look at it. He's like, yeah, this looks good. I checked it out, tried the vacuum compressors and chairs and everything seemed good. And so I closed on my birthday on March 8th, and I've been in there. So now I've been working my butt off because I'm here 3 days a week at my associateship, and then Monday, Tuesday, so Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, and then Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, I'm working at my startup trying to build it up. So yesterday was officially first day of seeing patients and money coming in and set out. So it's a good feeling.
Yeah. Awesome, man. So we're going to dive into that a little bit more a little later on. But if we can rewind a little bit, you said you talked about working for Pacific Dental and you were there 4 months, 30 days, too long.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that. What were some things, were systems you're like, I like these systems. And then what were some systems you're like, I never want to do this if I own my own practice?
Let's just say there's two parts to this. Pacific Dental in general has, I think, a bad reputation, similar to the bigger DSOs like Aspen and Heartland. But even within that organization, there's good and there's bad. And the office I was at was probably, you know, the creme de la creme of bad. It's in terms of systems that they have, I don't like that they are primarily an HMO-based organization, because although HMO has a place, it's maybe rewarding towards somebody that owns the practice. You can make it work. But as an associate, I mean, I was making less than $115,000 a year, which is, I mean, I went $350,000 in debt in 8 years of school, not to... I should have just stayed a used car salesman at that point. We made a dollar amount. So that was part of it. The other part was that they are heavily, heavily reliant on CEREC. I don't know what it's like in other Pacific practices, but the practice that I was at, they were, I mean, there was no training. I just got thrown out the day after school saying, hey, you got to do all these CEREC. You can't send anything to labs, when it was, you know, anterior crowns that I'm trying to make on the spot. No training, no whatsoever. And you're with the HMO model, a class two filling, you end up getting paid like $30 on it. And you're getting a third of that as an associate. So $10 for a filling, that's not enough to feed myself. What happens is that you're motivated to try to upgrade that to an inlay, a CEREC inlay, which is like $400 and it's not covered by the HMO. So trying to convince somebody that's already on an HMO, so their financial situation is not the most ideal, telling them, hey, you have two fillings and each of them is $400. They're going to be quite confused on why a filling costs $400. So what ends up happening is those patients usually don't do it and the problem becomes even bigger. So I did not like that system. The other thing is that they have, because of the HMO situation, so let's say you're a general practitioner, you... doing a prep on a tooth that's, you know, let's say you have a tooth that, you know, has big cavity in it. You might have pulp exposure on it and you do a pulp it. Instead of doing the root canal then and there, the patient is numb and all, you are not really allowed to do that. You have to send it to a specialist that comes in office. From the standpoint of DSO, they get paid less because it's an HMO. So let's say you paid $600 on that root canal. Plus, it's a GP that's doing it, so the liability increases. So they would prefer to have that same root canal be done by a specialist at a higher price and lower liability. So I get it from that point of view, but it's not the best for the patient. If it's numb right there and then, I know that's what's going to happen. I'm just going to do the root canal if it happens, be ready for it. So that's what I didn't like. What I did like about their systems, I would say they were very... you know, they were early on with trying to move all the electronic health record system to a centralized system that all the practices use.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't say there's a lot of positives, I would say.
Gotcha. And then your associateship, you said you were going to try and find one that you partnered up with. You know, create a partnership. Is this one that you're in?
So that was the goal, is to partner up. And that was kind of the discussion that was taking place. So, you know, when I first had that interaction with the founder slash my, the doctor still works with me, they're like, yeah, I mean, we're open to that. We would want to work for probably a year at least to see if that is the right setup. And I was like, that's fair enough. I probably want to do the same thing on my end. And first year came by and we're like, all right, yeah, this is working well. The office is is profitable. You know, I like them. They like me. So they were kind of starting to move in that direction, probably moving slower than I would like. But the reality is that opportunity came to me and it came quick and I had to jump on it quick. So I really didn't want to.
Yeah.
Couldn't wallow in what ifs. I just had to execute.
And you told them immediately, or did they even know?
Yeah. So I did some soul searching in that regards to, you know, do I tell them and risk losing a job when I'm not ready for, I need to pay my bills. So I needed the income that's I'm relying on from those 3 days. So I was like, do I tell them? Do I not tell them? But they've honestly been just so, so good to me. And it's been a good setup. So I was like, let's keep it that way. And when I told the owner, Doc, he was super excited. He was very understanding. He's like, yeah, get up and going and I'll come check it out. So just, you know, obviously he wanted, there was some things about, you know, not soliciting the current staff or the patients, which is understanding, but
yeah,
it's far enough. It's not going to be really an issue.
Okay. How far is it from your association?
Funny enough, it's actually on the same street.
Okay.
But it's just 4.5 miles down that way.
Wow. So is he going to, or did he make you sign like an NDA or anything like that? Or, you know what I mean? Like, hey, don't talk about practice with anybody on our staff team.
No, everybody knows. Just, I mean, I'm not bringing it up to patients. I don't think any patients are really listening to this podcast, but like I said, it's a different setup. So the place I'm working in, the associateship here, it's a really nice area. I don't know if any of your listeners know where Implant Pathway is. It's very close to that in Tempe area, but it's a place where there's like 5 different dentists in this plaza. 5 GPs, 1 periodontist, a lab, Van Hook Laboratory. If any of your listeners have ever used it. Well, my practice is more, you know, it's in the rougher part of town, to be completely honest with you. It's all more in the border of Tempe and Phoenix, where it's just a different beast. So I don't think they're concerned about me taking patients there either.
Yeah. Are you worried about the quality of your dental supplies? With the Dentist Supplies Company, rest easy knowing you're getting top-notch products from trusted manufacturers. And to make things even sweeter, use the promo code TDM25 for 25% off orders over $500. Go to TDSC.com to check out more and get quality and savings at the same time. So there's a segment in our interviews where we sprinkle in some questions or scenarios throughout the interview so our audience can get to know you better. And the first scenario is the unsend button. So if you had an unsend button for any decision you made in your life or business, what moment would you use it on and why?
Yeah, I thought about that question. I decided to go with, I would give myself the advice of don't race in reverse in icy conditions.
Oh, elaborate. Yeah. Go further on that.
Well, this is that first year here I was in the U.S., my high school year that I spent in the U.S. was, you know, coming from Syria. I just survived multiple, you know, encounters with being shot at and being imprisoned and all that. So I felt invincible. Nothing's going to kill me. And I was just in revolution mode still. So I don't remember how exactly what happened, but I ended up, you know, with the back of my car. I was in the parking lot of my high school. My buddy, the front of his car was towards the exit. My car, the back of it was towards the exit. I don't remember how exactly we ended up in that spot. We were just backing out to leave school. And he starts to rev his engine. I'm like, all right, let's go. So he starts to race. I got my car up to like 35 miles an hour in reverse. And then it was icy Iowa. So my car slid. My car hit a car. That car moved and hit another car. There wasn't anybody in the car, but I totaled my car. So
That's interesting. I thought it was a metaphor for something, but it's an actual thing that you actually did.
Yeah. So I was reckless for sure. So that's probably one of my main regrets.
Okay. So going back, let's dive into your first day that you opened up your new practice right now that you're in. What were some things that you felt you had totally overshot and you're like, we should have looked at this, or you underestimated or anything like that within the first day?
Well, I'm trying to think. I mean, so the practice, like I said, was up and going. So it wasn't like a startup from, you know, it's not that established $1 million practice, you know, level 10. It's not the startup at level 0. It's more like at level 2. Systems are in place. The internet is there. The phone is there. You know, all that systems are in place. So that made it easier. The other thing that made it easier is the doctor that sold it to me has been extremely helpful. And so like the day we closed escrow was Friday, and I actually had signed up for an all-on-4 course Friday and Saturday. So there was already patients on the schedule on Saturday. So he's like, "Do you want me to just see them for you and, you know, take care of them for you?" I was like, "Of course, yeah, I would rather not move patients." So that was helpful. And then I got in on Wednesday. That's a funny story. So he had a front desk that kind of served as front desk, back desk for him, you know, assistant front desk, and somebody that was completely in the front that was leaving. So I was going to be able to keep that assistant in place, but I was going to have to find somebody to help me in the front. So he was trying to help me out and interviewed somebody for me on that Friday we were closing. And they're like, "Yeah, she's young, but she speaks Spanish. She seems like she's got a good attitude." So I didn't hire her. I just told her, "Hey, come back and you'll discuss with a new doctor." So on Wednesday, that's the one that was supposed to come in. I texted her then, you know, a couple of days before, "Hey, looking forward to meeting you. We didn't have a chance to interact very much, but come in. We'll discuss expectations and pay and hours and all that." "Yes, Dr. Shkoli, thank you for the opportunity. I'm looking forward to it." And Wednesday morning comes in. It's just me and her was going to be because the other girl doesn't work that day. Like, all right, 8 o'clock, 8 to 5, 8 to 10. Where the hell is she? I text her. My number was blocked.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So there was a patient that was coming in at like 9. So I was like, they're new patient. They're not confirmed. They're not going to show up. So I'm looking in this practice by myself. There's so much junk, you know, I'm somebody that hates clutter. So I was just, it needed work. Everything's out. I'm cleaning everything. I'm getting rid of some stuff. I'm learning where everything is even. And then lo and behold, that patient at 9, not only did they show up, it was the grandma and the daughter and 2 kids and they have a tooth that needs to be pulled. They need some cleanings and they're all cash paying patients. Oh man, I'm sorry. I explained to them, I apologized and I was like, "Come back on Friday. I'll take your tooth out for free. You'll be my first patient here." So she ended up coming in and actually left me my first 5-star Google review.
Oh, nice. You did it for free?
Yeah, I did do it free.
Okay. And that you never got any word from the person that ghosted you?
No, but I hired two team members now officially. They're both good. One of them is somebody I worked with before a long time ago at that Pacific spot. She's going to be my assistant. She's been there. She's just helping me out, you know, organizing the place, getting the back of the office organized and up and going. And then the other person that I hired for the front, it's very Hispanic based area. I don't speak any Spanish, so I need somebody that did. So this girl I found, she was a dentist in Mexico and she came in here 2 years ago, finally got her green card, and she wants to go down the path of applying to dental schools. She's a foreign trained graduate, which is extremely competitive. So she wants to kind of work on her resume. And so she's helping me in the front. She knows her stuff. I mean, yesterday she helped me with an extraction. And honestly, she probably has more experience than me. So
got you right. Interesting. So you mentioned that you're organizing everything there right now. How disorganized is it or was it?
Well, extremely disorganized. I mean, he was, like I said, he wasn't really trying to build it up and get up and going. I'm also, in general, I'm a very OCD person. Like, I like everything to be systematized. Every operatory looks the same, everything in the same spot. Everything has to be flowing well, where the least amount of moves has to take place in order for something to be accomplished. So there's a lot of work that I'm working on and just getting everything into the standards I'm happy with. So I'm also very, you know how there's some people that like to hold on to the box their laptop comes in?
Oh, yeah. Like, that's a good box. That's a good looking box. You should keep it.
It's that kind of practice. There's a lot of stuff. So I'm not that person. I'm a person that I'd rather throw everything away and then regret I threw something out than keep it and have the clutter. So there's a lot of trash that got thrown out, but it's up and going. Yesterday we did my first, like I said, I didn't have any terminal either. So I had to get a square until the terminal comes in. So yesterday I collected $484.
Oh, nice. Okay. Cash or?
All cash. No insurance.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's really interesting. So then the team and the patients, how do they feel? Like the original team, I know you mentioned one left, but like, do the patients feel like, "Oh no, where's the other doctor?" How do they feel?
No. So like I said, I was going to hold on to one staff member. But honestly, the interaction with her from the get-go was like, she doesn't really want to stay. She already has another job. She was just kind of helping out this doctor. But she's like, I'll stay with you for a few days just to teach you where everything is, then go in and get somebody else in the spot. So now that we have that new team in place, she's gone. The main challenge I'm having right now is the verbiage, because the doctor before me did take insurances. So trying to explain to those new patients that I'm not going to be taking insurances is a little challenging. So first couple of days, I mean, it's not like a 3,000 patients I'm having experience to. Yeah, there's 170. A lot of them are walk-ins and emergencies that's happened over the time. So I'm trying to figure that out still.
Yeah.
I had that patient that needed what does she need? She just does an exam. So said, hey, I'll honor your rate that you're insured. You know, I basically didn't build the insurance and just collected what she would have paid out of pocket. I just explained like, hey, this is why I'm not doing insurance. My whole mission with this practice is to provide high quality care at very low cost. And the only way for me to do that is to cut all the insurance and administrative aspect that comes with it. Because honestly, you know, I did some soul searching and figuring out, do I want to take insurance? Do I want to take Medicaid? Do I want to take Medicare? What do I want to do? And I think insurance is a scam. So,
Yeah. Interesting. You mentioned it a couple times, soul searching. You did that after you bought it, before you bought it?
No, I would say, I mean, I had to do a little bit of soul searching twice. I would say one is whether I tell the current associateship. The other one was in regards to insurances to take or not take. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the first one was in terms of, you know, how would I want to be treated and what is ultimately the kind of relationships I want to have in life. And for me, honesty is a big important factor. So I was like, well, I'll just tell them let the chips fall where they may be. And I didn't regret my decision. And in terms of insurance, same thing. I personally, if you talk to 100 dentists in the US, probably 90% of them are going to tell you their main thing they hate the most is insurance. So why would I do, you know, but at the same time, when you talk to those same dentists, they'll tell you, oh, you know, you got to take insurance. So yeah. Like something doesn't line up here. So if you do the thing that everybody else is doing, then didn't make sense to me. So I'm just making a bet and maybe I'll lose, maybe I'll win, but I want to do it my way. And
then you'll see from there kind of thing.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So far, so good. It's just, life is just so much easier. I can look somebody, because I hate somebody asking me, hey, how much is this going to cost? And me not being able to truly answer them. And here, I'll just, you know, how much is this going to cost? I made my prices cheap. And the only way that I'm going to be able to make them cheap is that I don't have somebody that's spending time doing insurance verification and denials and appeals and all that nonsense. And then what happens is, this is a strategy that all PPO offices are doing now, where they'll increase their UCR fees by a crazy amount. And that when they're negotiating with the, and then they'll hire a company that they have to pay, negotiate for them. So you have Unitas or PPO Profits or whatever. So they have to pay a fee to that company. They have to raise their UCRs a crazy amount. So when they do negotiate with them, you're like, okay, our crowns are $2,000, so we'll accept 800. Their crowns are $1,000, then they'll accept it. They'll give them 500. So strategy that everybody's doing, so it's not working anymore anyways. But it's also raising the prices on people who don't have any sort of insurance. Insane. I mean, crowns shouldn't cost $2,000. Shouldn't cost $1,500 either. So that's one cost. Then you have the ongoing write-offs that the PPO takes off your fee. So that's like some of them 50, 60% off the UCR fee. That's ongoing forever as long as you're in network. And then you have the cost of the administrative person that is in there, its entire position that's there to, and all the headaches. You know, the patient was told that this is what they would cost. Now it's, the insurance didn't cover it. This is what I want to do, but the insurance doesn't cover that. It's, and then so your option could be is that, okay, let's start. Since you're a startup, you start with the insurance company is, and then you drop them. But that's not realistic. I mean, you have bunch of patients that are not pissed off. You're taking my insurance now. You're not taking my insurance. Now you have to get rid of that, you know, Susan that's been with you for 5 years. That's you've gone to her kids' birthday parties. You got to tell her, hey, I don't need you anymore. Goodbye. Not easy. It's not as easy as it sounds. So I'm just keeping it simple. You know, how much is an extraction, dog? Well, depends on extraction, either for 150 or 250. You know, simple versus extraction. How much is a crown? 750.
Yeah.
So
plain and simple.
deal with, you know, oh, we have to build a core build up at the seat and the core build up at the prep and the prep. It's just stupid games.
Gotcha. Interesting. All right, man. So our next scenario is the unlikely mentor. So who in your life has given you the best business advice that was completely unexpected? And what was the advice?
So advice came from somewhere that was somewhat expected, but how much influence it had was a little unexpected. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with Dr. Howard Ferrand, the founder of Dentaltown.com. So I did his 30-day dental MBA, which I would highly recommend to anybody that's interested in anything dental related, business related dentistry. So watch that 30-day dental MBA. And the one advice that I got that was just, I didn't expect it to be so powerful, was to read the autobiography of billionaires. So that's the advice I took from him. Right now I'm doing Elon Musk's autobiography. And honestly, I could probably tell you that half of the decisions I've made over the past few months have been directly related to that, to reading that life story. Because, I mean, if you think you're taking a risk opening a practice, read the autobiography of those billionaires that took real risk. I mean, they're sending people, he's sending people to Mars. I mean, that's real risk. That's you going to open a practice is not.
Yeah.
Elon Musk has this, what's called his algorithm. So it's a 5-step approach that he applies to every company, to every process that he has. So step one is you question every requirement there is and make it less stupid. Step two is you eliminate any processes that shouldn't really be there. Step three, you simplify it and make it more efficient. Step four is you accelerate that cycle, make it quicker. And then step five is you automate it. Mm. So his idea is that, you know, you got to take decisions. You got to take it fast. You can't spend too much time thinking about it. You may make wrong decisions and, you know, get rid of processes. And you're likely that you have to come back and add them back again because you maybe took too much off. But it's better than wasting time. So that's why that was my decision. Is like, I'm not going to think too much about whether I'm going to do this or not. I'm not going to spend 2 months doing analysis of demographics and all that. You know, I look at it, it looks good, I go for it.
Yeah, interesting. So then right now you're in what phase of those 5 steps?
I would say, I mean, it depends on which part of the office it is. I would say it depends on which part of the office it is in terms of if those requirements. So, I mean, something as simple as like I'm making the clinical template notes for things, you know, the notes you write after you do a procedure. And I'm looking at previous notes I've had from somewhere else. I'm like, is this really important? Why is it important? So I'm questioning all those requirements and I'm not going to do something just because a lawyer said it's what needs to happen. If it doesn't make sense, then it's good.
Give me an example of that, like where you're like, hey, the lawyer said this, but doesn't make sense to me.
First thing that comes to my mind is like, there's a part of the note about anesthetic that was given. So I described the amount that you gave, which anesthetic that you gave, and then location of where it was given. So I was looking at like potential templates and one of them had local infiltration, inferior alveolar nerve block, and then MSA, PSA, ASA. So to the dentist, they'll understand you're not really going, if you're injecting in the upper, you're not really aiming for the MSA or PSA or ASA. You're probably just going to do local. So I'm like, there's no point in adding those MSA. It's something simple like that. But honestly, it's, you know, 1% improvement in one place, 1% improvement in another place that speeds up the process. I think that'll help.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. And then right now, what are you doing or going to be doing for marketing and advertising?
So I've talked to a marketing group and I probably will do a lot of, you know, marketing in terms of online, Google and Facebook. But honestly, right now, I just wanted to get in and see what exactly the type of patients that are there before I commit to spending $10,000 a month on marketing. So I'll do some marketing. I'm just not sure what yet. And honestly, so like tomorrow I'll be there. There's 6 patients, all cash paying, all the treatment needs. It's an area that doesn't really seem like it needs a lot of, it's a word of mouth type of place. So lots of Google, asking for Google reviews, lots of refer this patient, you'll get a $50 account credit type of situation. So it's not really a system in place yet. And I'll have to, I just need to get, there's more urgent issues on my mind. And
yeah.
take out any loans for this practice. So,
that's good, man. That's good.
I paid all in cash, and that depleted everything I had.
But it lights a fire, I think. You know what I mean? Like, hey, gotta get it back. You know what I mean? Like, immediately.
Right. Thing, yeah. Instead of- the landlord gave me 3 months of free rent, too, so it's helping as well. So my overhead is minimal. It's just staff, really, right now.
So what's your break-even point? Like, how much do you need?
I'm still working on calculating that. Just for the actual, like, rent and taxes and overhead, it's like, I mean, the rent is $2,200, including all the insurance and taxes and everything. So I think I need to really get that down and figure it out, but it's close to like $3,500 a month.
Okay. Okay. And that, not too bad or anything like that. Interesting.
Well, so then a few crowns.
Yeah. Throughout this process, Monsieur, like, I guess from the moment you started, you know what I mean, wanting to own your own practice till today, what's been some of the best companies you worked with and some of the worst ones, or some of the ones that maybe didn't go well with you?
Some of the best companies. So the first step I took to when I thought I wanted to own was like a year, I mean, like a year and a half ago, right when I graduated, I read Brian Hanks' How to Buy a Dental Practice book. And that basically was like, okay, you got to start by getting your team, get a lawyer, a CPA, and a broker, and a banker. So I did that. They were like, I had no plans of owning it at that point. I just wanted to get to listen to them and see what they had to say about my situation. And their advice was get out of PDS. So I did follow their advice. And then honestly, Dental Town has been really a good resource. Facebook has been a good resource. Just the podcasts I listen to have been a good resource. Like your podcasts, Dental Town, Dental Unfiltered. There's a lot. I mean, that's the thing. It's not 1970 anymore. It's not where you start and you have to figure it all out on your own. There's the internet. There's a million resources out there. So honestly, it's probably some of the easiest time to own a practice, but also some of the hardest time in the same way. But don't let that stop you.
Yeah. So then when you started owning this practice, not that long ago, how has it all affected your personal life?
Oh man, there's like, it's an all consuming every second of my waking hours. I went from working like 4 days a week to now doing 6.5 days a week, basically. So my social life is non-existent and probably will be for the next 2-3 months until I find, you know, exactly what I want to do. But I would say that's been the biggest effect, is that it's an all consuming thing. Every second has been accounting for, with a meeting with, you know, a QuickBooks expert to teach me how to use QuickBooks, a meeting to get my workers' comp and insurances figured out, meeting to with Clear, if you've heard of them, they're like the in-office insurance plan, a meeting with, there's just a lot going on. So yeah. My wife is very supportive, and she comes with me on Saturdays and been helping me out. So she understands how much I'm going to be working, but when I'm not, well, I'm bored, it's not a good thing for anybody involved.
Yeah, interesting.
I get trouble when I'm bored.
No, that's good. So then the end product, the vision of your practice looks like what?
Good idea. I actually wrote it down. So I am doing Mark Costas Dental Operations Manual book. First chapter is you got to get your mission in place, you got to get your vision and your core values. So let me see, I wrote it down. I'm going to get like nice and printed and put into like the main area in the office so everybody can see it. And it's called a vision for a reason, so people can see it.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay, so Southern Smiles is an exceptionally welcoming practice with a great reputation in the community. Patients trust us, appreciate our work, and refer their friends and family to us. Our team loves what they do and are dedicated to providing you with the best service in a fun and cozy atmosphere. Welcome to Southern Smiles. That's the vision, is a place where we have a good reputation in the community. People appreciate our work, because I'm not going to break my back over somebody that's an asshole. That's, you know, if somebody is being rude to me or my team, they're going to be dismissed. So patients that appreciate my work, patients that refer their friends and family to us, they value our work. In return, they can expect, you know, good service and good products and good reputation in the community. And our team being somewhere, you know, I don't really expect to be best friends with my team. We're not going to be the place where we're going out to eat and together and party together. It's not really what how I envision things, but it's a place where they know I'll take care of them and they like what they do. That's the vision really I have.
Yeah. Okay, man. Awesome. I like it. And then lastly, our last scenario, the soundtrack of success. So what song best represents the journey of your business? And you can share a specific moment that this song would perfectly fit.
There's one song that comes to mind, and it's Frank Sinatra's My Way. So my wife knows to play that if I die at my funeral. Very few regrets, hopefully.
Nice. Okay, man. Awesome. Monser, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure. But before we say goodbye, can you tell our listeners where they can find you?
I'm on Instagram and LinkedIn. I'm not really big on social media personally. Like, I kind of hate social media, to be honest. But if they need anything, meezdds@gmail.com. So meezdds@gmail.com or just Instagram. It's Dr. Shikali. I try not to post too much dentistry on there. I try to keep it personal. So I don't know how much advice I can be since I'm really early in my journey here. But I would just say you gotta be your own boss.
Yeah, my way, right? My way. Awesome, man. So that's going to be in the show notes below if anybody wants to reach out to Monser. And Monser, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure. And we'll hear from you
thanks
soon.
Thanks so much. Have a good rest of your day, man.
Hey, I appreciate you so much for tuning into this episode and listening to Monser. Wonderful guest. Monser, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. We truly appreciate it. We're excited to see you continue to grow and thrive in Arizona. So definitely keep us updated. If you want to reach out to Monser, go in the show notes below and look for his name and click on his links there. You can reach out to him there. And if you're struggling with high supply costs in your practice, go check out the Dentist Supply Company's world of competitive pricing, slashing your expenses without cutting corners. Plus, use our exclusive promo code TDM25. That's TDM25. And you can save a whopping 25% off orders over $500. So go to TDSC.com. That's their website, the Dentist Supply Company, TDSC.com. And then when you get the supplies you want and everything, use the code TDM25 and you'll save 25% off your orders. Don't let supply costs nibble away at your budget any longer. Go in the show notes below. Click the first link in the show notes below to find out more on the Dentist Supply Companies and look at everything you can get from their competitive pricing and all the supplies you can get there. And don't forget to use the promo code TDM25 to get your 25% off all your orders. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in and I'll talk to you in the next episode.